I like jokes very much, as does Alan Shapiro, in fact. When I say jokes, I don't mean witty remarks. I mean the Pope, a pig, and an optometrist go into a bar together. And then there's a punchline. My friend Elliot Gilbert knew more jokes than anybody ever knew. And Elliot died in his early 50s through a series of mistakes that doctors made. They made a blunder, and then they made another blunder, then they lied about the blunder, and that was the end of Elliot. And just about that time that Elliot died, our friend Bob Haas, the poet, had come out with his anthology of haiku. It's a wonderful book. I had always been kind of haiku deaf. I'd never quite gotten it. Bob would read some thing and then go, and I would feel sort of, but then I read Bob's introduction and the notes, which are wonderful to that anthology, and he explains the haiku is really just part of a renga. A renga is a linking poem, where a group of poets led by a master in the course of a long evening do a series of stanzas, and you pick up images through the different seasons according to certain rules, so that your poem you say the birds chattering in the tree in October in North Carolina are as many as the pores on my body. And then somebody else later on says, that's the fall one, and somebody says in the winter one, the tiny little grains of the snow glinting on the top of the car are like the pores in a piece of leather. And then the word pores gets picked up, and somebody else says, the little porous petals of the apple tree are shattered by my feet. And you do, each person does it wasn't a very good example, but you get the idea. That is exactly what people who read like jokes are like. That you tell the joke with the optometrist in it, and then I think of one about a dentist, and my dentist was Italian, so you think of another Italian joke, and that's how an evening of jokes can go. This is an elegy. It'll be probably the longest poem I'll read to you. It's an elegy for Eliot, and this poem, I'll warn you, does contain two jokes. I call it my two-joke elegy. If there's no laughter at all, I could break down easily. Impossible to tell. Impossible to tell. To Robert Haas and in memory of Elliot Gilbert. Slow dulcimer, gavotte and bow. In autumn, Basho and his friends go out to view the moon. In summer, gasoline rainbow in the gutter, the secret courtesy that courses like ichor through the old form of the rude, full-scale joke, impossible to tell in writing. Basho, he named himself. Banana tree. Banana after the plant some grateful students gave him, maybe in appreciation of his guidance, threading a long night through the rules and channels of their collaborative linking poem, scored in their teacher's heart, live, rigid, fluid, like passages etched in a microscopic circuit. Eliot had in his memory so many jokes, they seemed to breed like microbes in a culture inside his brain, one so much making another, it was impossible to tell them all. In the court culture of jokes, a top banana. Imagine a court of one, the queen a young mother, unhappy, alone all day with her firstborn child and her new baby in a squalid apartment of too few rooms, a different race from her neighbors. She tells the child she's going to kill herself. She broods, she rages. Hoping to distract her, the child cuts capers, he sings, he does imitations of different people in the building. He jokes. He feels if he keeps her alive until the father gets home from work, they'll be okay till morning. It's laughter versus the bedroom and the pills. What is he in his efforts but a courtier? Impossible to tell his whole delusion. In the first months when I had moved back east from California and had to leave a message on Bob's machine, I used to make a habit of telling the tape a joke. And partway through, I would pretend that I forgot the punchline or make believe that I was interrupted, as though he'd be so eager to hear the end, he'd have to call me back. The joke was Eliot's, more often than not. The doctors made the blunder that killed him sometime later that same year. One day, when I got home, I found a message on my machine from Bob. He had a story about two rabbis, one of them tall, one short. One day, while walking along the street together, they see the corpse of a Chinese man before them, and Bob said, sorry, he forgot the rest. Of course, he thought that his joke was a dummy. Impossible to tell. A dead-end challenge. But here it is, as Eliot told it to me. The dead man's widow came to the rabbis weeping, begging them, if they could, to resurrect him. Shocked, the tall rabbi said absolutely not. But the short rabbi told her to bring the body into the study house and ordered the shutters closed so the room was night dark. Then he prayed over the body, chanting a secret blessing out of Kabbalah. Arise and breathe, he shouted. But nothing happened. The body lay still. So then the little rabbi called for hundreds of candles and danced around the body, chanting and praying in Hebrew, then Yiddish and Aramaic. He prayed in Turkish and Egyptian and Old Galician for nearly 3 hours, leaping about the coffin in the candlelight so that his tiny black shoes seemed not to touch the floor. With one last prayer, sobbed in the Spanish of before the Inquisition, he stopped, exhausted, and looked in the dead man's face. Panting, he raised both arms in a mystic gesture and said, arise and breathe. And still the body lay as before. Impossible to tell in words how Eliot's eyebrows flailed and snorted like shaggy mammoths, as, the Chinese widow granting permission, the little rabbi sang the blessing for performing a circumcision and removed the dead man's foreskin, chanting blessings in Finnish and Swahili, and bathed the corpse from head to foot, and with a final prayer in Babylonian, gasping with exhaustion, he seized the dead man's head and kissed the lips and dropped it again, and leaping back, commanded, arise and breathe. The corpse lay still as ever. At this, as when Basho's disciples wind along the curving spine that links the Renga across the different voices, each one adding a transformation according to the rules of stasis and repetition, all in order and yet impossible to tell beforehand, Eliot changes for the punchline. The wee rabbi, still panting like a startled boxer, looks at the dead one, then up at all those watching, a kind of Mel Brooks gesture. Oh boy, he says, now that's what I call really dead. O mortal powers and princes of earth, and you immortal lords of the underground and afterlife, Jehovah, Ra, Bolmora, Hecate, Pluto, what has a brilliant living soul to do with your harps and fires and boats, your bric-a-brac and troughs of smoking blood? Provincial stinkers, our languages don't touch you. You're like that mother whose small child entertained her to beg her life. Possibly he grew up to be the tall rabbi, the one who washed his hands of all these capers right at the outset. Or maybe he became the author of these lines, a one-man Renga, the one for whom it seems to be impossible to tell a story straight. It was a routine procedure. When it was finished, The physicians told Sandra and the kids it had succeeded, but Elliot wouldn't wake up for maybe an hour. They should go eat. The two of them loved to bicker, in a way that on his side went back to Yiddish, on Sandra's to some Sicilian dialect. He used to scold her endlessly for smoking. When she got back from dinner with their children, the doctors had to tell them about the mistake. Oh, swirling petals. Oh, falling leaves. The movement of linking Renga coursing from moment to moment is meaning, Bob says in his haiku book. Oh, swirling petals, all living things are contingent, falling leaves, and transient, and they suffer. But the universal is the goal of jokes, especially certain ethnic jokes, which taper down through the swirling funnel of tongues and gestures toward their preposterous Ithaca. There's one a journalist told me. He heard it while a hero of the South African freedom movement was speaking to elderly Jews. The speaker's own right arm had been blown off by right-wing letter bombers. He told his listeners they had to cast their ballots for the ANC, a group the old Jews feared as in with the Arabs. But they started weeping as the old one-armed fighter told them their country needed them to vote for what was right. Their vote could make a country their children could return to from London and Chicago. The moved old people applauded wildly, and the speaker's friend whispered to the journalist, "It's the Belgian army joke, come to life." I wish that I could tell it to Elliot. In the Belgian army, the feud between the Flemings and Walloons grew vicious, so out of hand the army could barely function. Finally, one commander assembled his men in one great room to deal with things directly. They stood before him at attention. "All Flemings," he ordered, "to the left wall." Half the men clustered to the left. "Now all Walloons," he ordered, "move to the right." An equal number crowded against the right wall. Only one man remained at attention in the middle. "What are you, soldier?" Saluting, the man said, "Sir, I am a Belgian." "Why, that's astonishing, corporal. What's your name?" Saluting again, "Rabinowitz," he answered. A joke that seems at first to be a story about the Jews. But as the Renga describes religious meaning by moving in drifting petals and brittle leaves that touch and die and suffer the changing winds that riffle the gutter swirl, so in the joke, just under the raucous music of Fleming, Jew, Walloon, a courtly allegiance moves to the dulcimer, gavotte, and bow, over the banana tree, the moon in autumn, allegiance to a state impossible to tell. Thank you. Thanks very much. After I had finished that poem, I was nervous about showing it to Sandra Gilbert, who incidentally has written a very moving, wonderful prose book about Eliot's death called Wrongful Death. And I asked my poet friend Peter Sachs, who's an expert, he wrote a prize-winning book called The English Elegy. I said to Peter, "I'm very nervous about sending it to Sandra." In fact, I did send it to their son first. And he said, "Why?" I said, "Well, if you've lost a loved one, to have a joke and have somebody say, 'Really dead.'" And Peter said a wonderful thing. He said, "Really dead?" He said, "That's the point of all elegy." At that, the Rabinowitz joke, I just thought that was good North Carolina material.